Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi there, and welcome to today's edition of the GoTo Book Club. My name's Damien McLennan. I'm a consultant CTO and software architecture trainer and with a company called Stack Mechanics, and I'm based in Brisbane, Australia. Today, I'm talking with a fellow Australian and Brisbaneite, Ashley Davis. He's recently released a second edition of his book, Bootstrapping Microservices with Docker, Kubernetes, GitHub Actions, and Terraform. So Ashley, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background in the software industry and what led you to write this book?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for joining me, Damien. I know that you've got a long history in kind of what we're going to be talking about today as well. So I'm really, really excited to talk to you about it. I've been a developer for over a quarter of a century now. I've been around a bit. I've done all the languages, at least hopefully all the important ones. So I've worked across a bunch of domains. Worked for a whole bunch of different size companies, from startups to the biggest internationals, and worked with a lot of different, I guess, ways of structuring software. And microservices, or I think more appropriately, distributed applications, is, I guess, you know, mostly where I'm at now. Although, you know, I still consider myself. I've spent a lot of time in startups, so I'm a constant dabbler anything and everything you can imagine. So I work across
the
stack.
And you have to maintain a career of length, you have to be a constant dabbler and always reinventing, right?
Yeah. So yeah, like front end, back end, love some of the problems that sort of come into play in distributed applications. Really interesting stuff, interesting problems to get your head around and to find, you know, solutions that only add as much complexity as is needed to manage the complexity, really, and to keep it just simple enough, like, you know, not to over engineer it, basically. So, you know, we have complicated problems to solve, and trying to solve them in ever more simpler but more effective ways,
which kind of leads me to, and I want to dive right into some of the sort of nitty-gritty of microservices, but your first edition came out in January 2021, which is a little over 3 years ago. So what brought about you writing the second edition? Was it industry trends? Was it based on feedback or just an update of the tools and better techniques that you saw out there?
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to write a second edition unless the book's popular in the first place. So there was that. And, you know, yep. having microservices on the cover helps with that, even though, you know, I mean, it's a book for working with any kind of distributed application, really, and microservices is just one end of the extreme, you know, of choices, which I'd like to talk about some more as well. But
absolutely.
So yeah, so Manning, who I've worked for on a few books, you know, came back and asked me to do a second edition, and I'd loved working on that book, and I didn't, you know, like, nothing like that is ever finished. You just at some point you kind of have to say,
have to ship it.
This is enough.
It's like software.
Ship it. And yeah. And so I had feedback coming in while I was writing it that I couldn't address. I had feedback coming in after I'd published it because I, you know, if people reach out to me, I'm always happy if I can, you know, fit in the time to actually jump on a call and, you know, talk people through like what they're trying to achieve and, you know, like why they're having trouble if they're having trouble. And so I got a lot of feedback that way as well, and made a lot of interesting connections with people that way. And then, you know, things changed in the industry. Software was updated. Terraform reached version 1. I mean, Docker's been around for a long time, but when I first started writing the book, I wasn't sure whether Kubernetes was really going to be, you know, like the king of microservices or the king of distributed applications. And it seems, you know, as much as I can tell, that it is now, at least. So there was, you know, like I put, you know, and since I wrote the first edition, I became, I got a qualification in terms of becoming a certified Kubernetes developer. So
right.
I'd really pushed my experience with Kubernetes like further along, done a lot more stuff in production as well. So all that influenced it. And also I found simpler ways of doing things. So in the first edition, you know, some of the examples are more complicated than they needed to be. And through writing the second edition, I was able to kind of come back, revisit that and simplify it. And it's still effectively the same result, but just, you know, code and examples that are a little bit simpler. And, you know, and hopefully I've come up with, you know, because I think about it again and get a chance to kind of revise it and go through all the whole feedback process as well that Manning organized, which is a really great
yep.
way of writing a book, that, you know, the explanations are hopefully are better, are clearer and are yep. more to the point. And yeah, so... you know,
doing that's the thing when you explain the same concepts over and over again, you come up with shortcuts to saying things, you come up with better analogies. And yeah, so that's something that yep. I'm certainly familiar with as well. And like you said, a lot of the tooling's improved. So some hoops you may have had to jump through 4 years ago, there's a shortcut for them now. So yeah fantastic.
Sure. So it's all about finding better ways to do things, more effective ways to do things. And for me also, it's, you know, finding more effective ways to teach things in terms yes. of the writing of the book.
Absolutely. So as an architectural style, you know, microservices have gone through the full hype cycle. You know, we had the sort of really early adopters, they gained some real traction, saw some, you know, a lot of real world usage, and then everyone wanted to jump on that bandwagon. Some of those people learned some very expensive and very painful lessons. Then we see people a little bit more hesitant and, you know, so in... When is a microservice architecture the right choice? Like, what makes a good candidate for a microservices architecture?
Like, that's a really hard question to answer in a general way. You know, it not everything needs to be microservices. I mean, I think you know part of the problem maybe is that microservices have been pushed on a lot of people, and developers have been forced to use microservices in situations that, you know, didn't call for it. So I think you've got to think really, you know, really deeply about whether microservices are the right answer to your question. And I'm actually, you know, I want to talk about this more in a bit, but I'm somewhere sort of more in the middle now. So like, if you ask me microservices or monolith, I'll say somewhere in the middle. I think it's a great place to be to basically get the most out of both those different ways of working. And then you get to choose to use microservices for features or for aspects of the application where it matters. So it's not like saying, you know, here's an app and you should definitely use microservices for everything. It's like, here's an app and it's structured in such a way that things that can make use of the benefits of microservices can be spun out into separate services. And I've got like a list of examples of things that have worked really well for me in production applications that I've built. Like I've worked on a couple of different applications that needed to run AI models, so pre-trained AI models, like, you know, something you load up into TensorFlow, and not only does that maybe the tech stack you have to use for that conflict maybe with the tech stack
yes.
you actually want to use for the customer endpoints that the customers are directly talking to kind of use the web application or the mobile application or whatever it is the backend's talking to. So you want to, for those AI models, we always wanted them to be separate. It was just like it was so obvious that you want to spin an AI model out into a separate service, because then you can kind of control the performance of it and the, you know, the problems that it has. Like, you can have some sort of fault isolation. So if you spin
yes.
that kind of thing out to a separate service, you can scale it, you can throw a GPU at it, you can prevent any problems that are happening there aren't going to be affecting the customer. So I think that was one of the first things that I was like, yeah, like, this is, you know, a place where it's cut and dry. You can put this kind of thing in a microservice and, you know, run a dozen of them, as many as you
That's
need
right.
to kind of
it's get, a great, get throughput. Yeah. It's a great use case. Any computationally or time-expensive processing that you can offload onto an ASIC process and build it into an isolated space that's, yeah, fault-tolerant and not so time-sensitive is going to make your general app scale better, perform better, right? It's a,
yep.
it's a sort of a an easy win.
You know, one of the applications I worked on, one of the ones that had AI models in it, was a general kind of asset processing system. Like you could... as an extreme example, you could upload a video to it, and then the video would there would be a process that could chop up the frames of the video, do AI analysis on individual frames, you know, pick a thumbnail for the video at somewhere in the video.
Yeah,
I mean this is an example of something that could be quite performance intensive. That if you're set up in the right way to use microservices, even if you've got a monolith, even if you've got like most of your stuff's in a monolith. You can kind of spin this one thing out to a microservice and suddenly, you know, your performance problems are gone and you can kind of keep that separate. You can run it at a really low priority if you want to save money, or you can spin up 10 of them if you want to get the throughput.
Yep.
So again, you know, performance, fault isolation. And we had say like 20 of these services that could handle different types of assets and do different kinds of processing on them. Like you would upload an audio file. And it would spin off a service that could do the transcription of it. So that was just talking to something in AWS and basically waiting for a transcription to come back. But that was just something that you could kind of like hold off from everything else basically and keep it at a distance, as it were. So that kind of thing worked really well. I've worked for blockchain companies, and you know there's a need for security. And kind of, you know, ring fencing, you know, certain transactions on the blockchain, or ring fencing any data that's any financial data or any kind of keys or secrets that you don't necessarily want the rest of the wider organization to be able to access, like the
yep.
security reasons to spin off things
yes.
like that
yes.
in separate services as well.
So that's a really good example. I've had some similar experience. Working in a compliance space where we had sensitive data. And again, through building that off into separate services, we could completely isolate and ring fence around that data. So it's a really good example.
And of course, you know, there's reasons to use microservices for, you know, reusability and, you know, composing systems together as well. I would say never do that just for that reason. Like don't split off a microservice just because you think it might be good to reuse it. It's like, you know, in any kind of coding, you can always go overboard with like componentizing things or
yes.
creating abstraction layers and stuff like that. But I mean, a really good example I've got here is like having a separate service for doing email notifications or something like that, or like SMS notifications, because that's something that possibly a lot of other services in your system want to reuse. And so it makes sense to kind of spin that out as a separate service. But I like I said, I would never do that just for, because, you know, it's good for reusability. Like there it has to be that there is a need for that reusability. Not
That's right. Any good abstraction is going to come from working software. If you start with the library or the framework or the service first, you're very likely to get that modeling entirely wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So that kind of thing, I think, can come as you build it, like because you've got other reasons, like what we've talked about, you know, for performance or fault isolation or security reasons. And I mean, there's a list of benefits, right, to using microservices.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I don't know if we want to kind of tread that path.
Well, yeah. So what haven't we covered? We've covered performance. We've covered security and compliance. We've covered isolation. We've covered reuse. Do you see any others, you know?
Yeah, well, on my list of benefits, where these are personally my top two, and there's like, you know, like a world of discussion probably under each of these, but one is that I really love, that I don't know how well it's appreciated or kind of understood by people, is being able to build a system or design a system so that you can kind of replace it over time. And so that's really hard to do with a monolith. Like with a monolith,
yes.
you kind of, You're stuck with what you've got for a long, if it's successful.
Versions of frameworks and yeah.
But with microservices, you know, anything that you've carved up into separate processes, then you've got like basically a way forward in terms of like, okay, that, you know, replacing them one at a time with, you know, whatever, like if it's changing the tech stack to something newer, it's just like done really badly. Like each service, you know.
Yes.
One thing I love is that microservices can be like little islands of tech debt. Like, and
but
and,
it's encapsulated tech debt, right? It's like it's isolated tech debt. No.
That's right. And it's already set up so that you can kind of throw a piece of it away and replace it with something better.
Yeah. And like you said, even just like framework versions and Docker makes that really easy, because it used to be if you wanted to upgrade a framework version in an organization, you would have to upgrade every build server and every developer machine, and you know, your build chains would have to change. And now you can just say, okay, well, I'm touching this service today, so I'm going to bring it to the latest, and I'll bring it to the latest Docker image to host it on. And that's a very isolated change, and it doesn't affect all of the other things. So you never have those let's rev the entire enterprise projects, which are awful.
Obviously, there's some anti-patterns that can break that, which
yes,
I
sure.
think we'll talk about soon. But yeah, just being able to design the system, you know, so that the parts of it can be evolved over time in a way
absolutely.
That the system itself doesn't break. So I think and you can keep it running. You know, while you do that, you can basically hot swap in new services for old services. You can add, if you've got a protocol like what I was talking about before with the asset processing, you can have a running system and you can add new types of asset processing to it on the fly by creating and deploying a new microservice.
Absolutely. So one thing we haven't touched on that is a real benefit is the people side of it, in that you can have smaller teams that, if you've got your general modeling right, can work on a small piece that has, you know, it might have some technical debt, but it's isolated technical debt. You don't need to understand the side effects of the entire enterprise to work on the one service. You can kind of fit that domain problem in your head quite nicely.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the common benefits that we're probably not even going to talk about is, you know, microservices allow not just scalability for performance and that for the granular tunability of performance, but scalability of the team
of people.
And having
absolutely.
A team of teams. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was just on my list of benefits to skip over, to be honest, because I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's not appropriate for everybody. Like these patterns, like you said, can be used by anybody, but certainly in much bigger organizations, so long as there's some sensible thinking around how you do that, it certainly lets you scale up your development organization.
So the other thing that I wanted to cover, like just on the, you know, on the last thing really on the benefits, is that microservices, you know, a lot of people think they cause complexity. A lot of people think I'm not going to use microservices because they're going to make things more complex. Like, I've got bad news for those people, because applications get complex no matter like what happens. Like, they're going to tend towards complexity in a big organization, a big company that's got a huge customer base. So I don't think you can like avoid complexity. Like, you just need to find ways to manage it so that it doesn't really stunt your development process and stunt your release cycle.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where microservices can really help, is to help you manage that complexity. So it's like taking something that is going to be very, very complicated and chopping it up into smaller, simpler, manageable parts.
And I think there's some techniques for that. And I actually want to get into that in a moment. I've got one more question first, but a lot of that is in how you structure your development environment and how you structure your code base. And I know you've got some really good stuff in the book about it, so I might come back to that in a moment. But let's take it to a slightly dark place first. You know, we've talked about the benefits and we've talked about hype cycle. You know, I know and you know there's a lot of people out there that have had some fairly expensive failures and some messy lessons. Yeah, what are the main pitfalls that you see out there?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes. It's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
I think, you know, microservices, like I've said up front, they're not suitable for every project. They're not suitable for every team or every use case. It's like if you've got to think really carefully about, you know, the cost versus the benefit. So you've got to basically justify whether microservices are going to deliver value. And if they deliver more value than they cost you in terms of investment, maintenance, skilling up, and, you know, management of the tech and stuff like that, then they're going to be useful. But if it's the other way around, if they're going to not deliver significant value for the effort you have to put in to kind of build that larger distributed architecture, you're going to have a bad time with microservices. And I think, you know, that's a big part of it. Microservices is not just for scaling up performance and development teams. The difficulty level scales as well. So what I'm sort of liking to tell people now is that, you know, if you're having problems with your monolith and you think that microservices is going to solve that for you, or microservices is going to solve all those problems, it's not. It's going to matter. Whatever problems you have with your monolith will be magnified.
Yeah. If you can't successfully, quickly, iteratively deploy and ship your monolithic app, you're not going to be able to do it with 20 or 30 or 50.
Yep.
You've got to solve your hygiene first, right?
I think the experience of probably a lot of people, which results in microservices getting a bit of a bad name, is that whatever problems they have just get scaled up by however many microservices they have. But you know, there are ways to do it where you don't have those problems, but you kind of need to solve those problems early. You know, you can't wait till you've got 100 microservices to start solving, you know, automated testing, automated deployment problems. You've got to have a really nice process, a really nice refined pipeline. And it's got to be rock solid as well. So, you know, no flaky build processes, no flaky deployments. Those things can be rock solid. But I think if they're an afterthought, if you wait till they're a problem to address them, then that's when you've got like a huge problem that's going to hurt a lot to be able to solve that problem.
Yeah.
So, but you know, like, I think any complex system is going to be hard. It's going to be hard to manage a complex monolith, you know, as it grows bigger and more complicated and has more people kind of touching it. In any development process, any project can be hard. It can be complex to get around. I think microservices can help, but, you know, only really if you've got your house in order, like first. And of course, you know, with distributed applications, you have new problems as well. Like, so, you know, there's a trend towards making systems more observable these days and being able to better understand how things are talking to each other and how messages are passing through systems. I think that's a really good trend. Like, it's still, obviously, it's still something that we're working on as a community. But that kind of like understanding what your application is doing as a whole and debugging the whole, obviously it scales up with microservices. So, you know, that's a work in progress still. And, you know, there's still room for improvement there.
It's absolutely essential. And you are right. You know, the advances in, you know, observability and tracing, distributed tracing tooling is absolutely essential now to do this. You know, the days of grepping through log files on servers in a distributed environment is just not, you know, that will let you down when you need it.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other major pitfalls that you see out there? I mean, some of the ones that I've seen are the two really that I see a lot of is relying on shared databases. And the other one is making things very synchronously chatty. And people just end up with a, you know, just dominoes.
I'd sort of put that in a slightly different category, but the whole shared database thing is like, you know, you when you create services, you want them to be loosely coupled, right? You don't want them to be sharing details that they shouldn't be sharing, and that's how you can kind of build a system where it's, you know, easier to change one thing but not have ripple effects like across the system through the different services. So that you know, loose coupling, like having them know as little about each other as possible, obviously that's completely destroyed by sharing a database. So I would say that this is the cardinal sin of microservices, is to share the database, because that completely voids any benefit you'll get from microservices. I think there's a scalability issue there. There's, you know, it's like also you get a similar problem from using too much synchronous communication between services. You get this kind of fragile system where if one part of it breaks, the rest of it breaks. And it's like, I think it's what they call a distributed monolith. Have you heard that one?
Yes. Yep.
You know, so being too synchronous, sharing a database, deploying everything in lockstep, like there's plenty of ways to do microservices wrong.
Yeah, well, that's right. Those two, the synchronous and sharing leads to you having to deploy things in a very specific way.
Yep. So one of the primary advantages of microservices is that you can deploy them independently, so that you can have separate teams working on them, and parts of the system can have kind of small deployments of microservices, and you don't have these big bang releases that you get with a monolith. But if you've got this kind of what we're talking about, this sort of distributed monolith, where it's a distributed system, but because of, you know, the way you've structured it, like there's so much depends on everything else, you get these kind of I wouldn't be surprised if you kind of fall back to kind of these big bang releases, and you know everything either works or it doesn't. And
absolutely,
and you're removing benefits like the reliability benefits and the fault isolation.
That's right. The fault tolerance goes out the window. So yeah, I mean,
I've seen as well, like what I'm thinking is an anti-pattern, and I think it's all in the name microservices. I think is just kind of wrong. Like I think because, you know, people don't really kind of get it. It's more about kind of, you know, some sort of logical single responsibility principle for the business, like not for technological concerns. And so the natural thing is, oh, it's got to be micro, right? It's got to be micro. So make it as small as you can. So, but that often leads to these systems where the services are like too small. And
yes,
and you've talked about this. I've heard you talk about, you know, services being too chatty, and I love the way you said that when you did. But you know, there's a massive network cost to pay for these things talking to each other, and there's just the system is more complicated than it needs to be. It's more complex than it needs to be. So, you know, when you have code or a system that is more complicated than it needs to be, more complex than it needs to be, then you're putting a larger cognitive load on the people that need to kind of understand it and move it forward. So it's like a cognitive tax, really. And so that's, yes. You know, like I think there's somewhere in between, like really small and too big. there's like a happy medium somewhere in between.
And I think where people go wrong is they get so excited about we're going to do microservices now, they forget modeling. You know, there are some fundamentals and some basics that will never go away, no matter what the stack. And that is, you need to learn how to model your software, and you need to learn how to model your domain. And far too many people get caught up in some new fad, and they really forget about those fundamentals. Because all of that is described by modeling.
It needs to be modeled around the business and, you know, and what the customers actually need from the software.
Yes.
You know, rather than around technical concerns. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of technical concerns that you need to deal with, but I mean you have to come to that really through that process of modeling and to understand, you know, how you're going to kind of divide up the system the way it's going to be divided up.
Yeah, and this has always been the case. This is not a new problem. It's just we repeat the same mistakes with every kind of technological evolutionary step.
But the new thing with microservices is that it's scaled up to a much bigger proportion.
Absolutely. So look, how do we do it right? You know, you've in the book, you know, I know you've said, look, here is a lot of the ways to do it. Like, what are some of your, you know, three or five tips of how do we do this right?
Yep. There's a bunch of boring stuff here, like that we probably don't need to talk about, you know, getting development right generally. One thing I'm a big believer in is being able to test things locally, you know, before testing in dev, before testing in staging, you know, before rolling it out to production. So it's like a hierarchy of testing where, you know, it's so much easier to test locally if you can get a setup for it, that you're going to be a lot more effective if you can work locally first. You know, before you get your PRs into dev or into the next staging after that, or QA or whatever you call it. So I think that's like, I think people have forgotten that. I think people have forgotten that, you know, we can run these systems locally. At least, you know, if it's a huge system, we might have to run it in some cut-down form. We're running it on our local development computer. So there are ways to do that. But I think in general, like people think it's an effective process to work in the cloud. And maybe it's just because we're in Australia and kind of maybe used to bad connections to the cloud, like that we care more about it. I don't know. Like, well, I certainly care about it anyway. Getting microservices right. I mean, it like I've talked about this already, but it's like, you know, do they deliver the value that kind of outweighs their cost? Because if not, then you're guaranteed to have a bad time. And then next, you need to kind of look at your skills and experience. Like if you're learning how to do distributed applications and microservices while building your first production application, you have to learn these things, you have to make mistakes and then correct for it, right? So you have to go through a series of mistakes and failures. And that's not a bad thing. That's how we learn. That's how we should learn. And we shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes or failing. But it can be really hard to do that from nothing, from having no experience to actually doing that on a production application.
This is where we need to bring in agile principles, right? We want to fail fast and learn from that and iterate and, you know, adapt as we learn. You know,
I'm talking more about, I guess, as a personal developer, like, and this is where my kind of book can help. It can help you kind of, you know, work through some of those early technical choices and mistakes. And plot a route to production. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about like how quickly can you deliver results for the customer that work for the business. And so it's about plotting a course through the technology to basically reach that point of success of delivering features to customers quickly. And you know, but that's a minefield, right? Like walking through the design patterns and the best practices and the silver bullets. I'm not just talking about microservices here, but, you know, walking through that technological landscape is a minefield that can, you know, take your legs off if you step on one of them. So, and again, that's what my book is for. Like I sort of learned the hard way and, you know, wanted, and this is the book that I wanted myself, but it didn't exist. So there are plenty of theoretical books on building with microservices, and they're great, and I've read a bunch of those and I love them, but you know, they don't give you that practical guidance of how do you kind of navigate this this treacherous pathway to actually being
getting the first one into production.
Well, it's sort of about being technically competent, because I mean, there is the bar of skills are just much higher for microservices than, you know.
Well, there's a lot more. Like, I mean, just in the title of your book, you've got Docker, Kubernetes, GitHub Actions, and Terraform. Like, that's a lot of pieces. It used to just be you wrote code.
Yep.
It might have gone to a build server, and then somebody put it on a server.
Yep.
Now, you know, there's a whole ecosystem of tooling that you need to understand and make choices around how you'll get your app into production.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, like crossing that gap, crossing the chasm is the hardest bit. So, but once you get some experience and once you start to, you know, you'll build your own toolkit of recipes of how to do this, that, and the other. And the book that I've written is full of my recipes that I've used in production. And I point out early in the book that it's just my recipes.
Like, it's your recipe.
like once you've gone down that road for a couple of years or more, you'll have your own complete set of recipes for all the, all the kinds of things that work for your business and your customers. And your team.
And your aesthetic, your sense of style and your taste as well. So, I mean, other than buying your book and reading your book, what should people do next if they're interested in working in microservices, in their company, in their team, and they haven't done it yet?
Yep.
Read the book.
Yep.
What else? What's the next step?
I mean, if you're just learning by yourself, then, you know, practice building something. So that way you can kind of, you know, have the time and the scope and you can make mistakes and, you know, not be under the pressure of actually having to kind of release things to production.
Learn production.
I think, you know, I'm always a big fan of having hobby projects. I mean, I've learned more from hobby projects than I have ever learned on the job. And I constantly have a hobby project on the go. And I use it to teach myself, like, the latest things, the latest ways of working and tools and stuff like that. And then sometimes write books about it. But, you know, like all that learning sort of goes into what I do day to day in production as well. It's just the day to day stuff is it's got to be a lot safer. I mean, you can't take as many risks of learning new things and bringing new technologies into play, you know, when you're working on a job that's, you know,
that's got, right, when got customers are paying.
But if you do your own stuff on the side, you can take those risks and, you know, make really bad mistakes and have really good learning from it and
have less fallout from them.
Yeah, that's right. In terms of bringing microservices into a company, I'd say tread very carefully, because the reality is you know, we have a lot of choice between monolith and microservices, and also even further, you could say that functions as a service are like a step on the spectrum beyond microservices. There's a lot of choice there. And the reality is that most production applications in the wild are like they're not conforming to what you think is an extreme, or like what you think is an ideal for what
reality's never pretty.
Yeah, it's always a mess somewhere in the middle and
somewhere.
But I think the tools in the book can really help, you know, those situations where
tame the mess.
Yeah, tame the mess, tame the distributed system. You know, be set up to appreciate that it's okay to be in the middle and have, you know, services of different sizes. You know, some are small, some are big, some there might be a couple of monoliths in there. I actually call it the hybrid model. So where you have like a monolith or a couple of monoliths and then a constellation of little microservices around the edge.
Yeah, and just supporting pieces.
Yeah, I've noticed a few people starting to talk about this as well, about, you know, it's not about which end of the spectrum you're at. You know, it's okay to be somewhere in the middle and be in a position where you can leverage the best of both worlds, basically. So, you know, there's a lot of convenience about using a monolith. It's, you know, it's all there. It's all together. It can all be tested at once. You've got access to everything without having to do kind of asynchronous messages or REST API calls. It's a lot simpler to work with. But then, you know, if you're set up with something like Kubernetes, you can easily pull bits out of that and make
break
microservices
pieces off as you need to.
As you need to, as a business need arises for it. And I think, you know, you're set for hopefully success if you can position yourself to not care about these religious wars of monolith versus microservices.
Yeah.
And actually take whatever the advantages, whatever the benefits you can from, you know, every possible situation. And that's why I think that actually the word microservices has probably outlived its usefulness. Like, I've talked about this before on different podcasts that, you know, it should be called right-sized services. It's like whatever is right for your situation. Like there's no microservices police out there that are going
right.
to come and look at your code and tell you your services aren't small enough.
That's right.
Stop worrying about it.
There's a lot of those terms that just get so much baggage attached to them that they lose their usefulness, right?
Yep.
So look, to wrap up, what's next for you? Are you working on new books? Any big projects in the works? What's next?
Yeah, well, I'm currently finishing my third full book, which is called Rapid Full Stack Development. So it kind of, a bit like how bootstrapping microservices, you know, sort of cross-cuts the world of distributed development. I'm trying to write a book now that basically cross-cuts the world of web application development front to back, and also talks a bit about using Electron for desktop applications and Capacitor for mobile applications using web technologies. But it's not really about what you're building. It's about how to be more effective and more productive at doing it. So that's Rapid Full Stack Development. That's what I'm finishing up at the moment. It's available now, like for a discount. So if you want to get on board like a couple of chapters before it's finished,
early access, yeah.
Please search for Rapid Full Stack Development. And one thing I'm toying with the idea of doing is making a video course from bootstrapping microservices. So if anyone is interested in how the book might translate into a video course, like a very hands-on practical thing, just like the book, then please take a look at bootstrapping-microservices.com, sign up to the email list, and you know we can chat about you know how I can help, basically help you understand how to build distributed systems.
Amazing. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got time for today. So look, thanks very much, Ashley. That was a really interesting chat, and good luck with the second edition of the book. It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.